Well, I appreciated the sermon that again. I did hear that at the feast. And as he mentioned, we are to be kings and priests to our God. Who is your God? You may be thinking, what in the world is he talking about? Who is your God? Unfortunately, we know we live in a world that God is irrelevant. God doesn't matter. People don't think about God. People have no idea about God's plans, about what God is planning in the future, about what God is doing now. And some people don't even know he exists, if you can believe that. And they don't have much idea and really don't care that he doesn't exist. Unfortunately, one of the most frequent ways, and I've thought about this, that you and I hear about God is really used in a, I guess you could say, a sacrilegious way. People that you work around, people that you come across, it's either G this, G that, GD this, OG this. That's how we hear them. That's how we hear about them. And if you get a text, you know how that is. It's hyphenated, or it's got its own little way of placing God. And so we see that most of our modern society, they are irreligious. They are, I think, really immoral or amoral. That's what you want to call that. Because why? They're busy doing their own thing. Busy doing their own thing. And, you know, the sermonette fits really well into what I'm going to talk about today. Because this is also something I think it's most important for us to understand. When I ask you about who's your God, you'd be thinking about that through this whole sermon. We're going to touch on several aspects of it. But it's interesting, when we look at God, when he started beginning and worked with man, he identified himself not as the God of the universe, not as a guy who created everything of this universe, but as a covenant God. A God who was vitally interested in the welfare of mankind. God knew that was vital, that man had a relationship with him. And it was so important that he introduced himself in his laws. And the very first law that we see him giving is what? You shall have no other gods before me. We think, well, that's pretty simple. It's pretty easy. And I think the first law of God's laws was the basis for all the other laws, the other nine. It covers all nine. And so putting God in the position of being what? First. First and foremost in everything that we do, in all of our lives, so that we can have that right relationship with him. So that we can be, as we heard, kings and priests in his kingdom. And then we think, God doesn't need the glory. He doesn't need the praise. He doesn't need that from us. It's for our good. It's for you and me that he gave this command. So that we have love for him, that we are obedient to him, that we can conform to his way of life. That's the basis for our success, isn't it? Success in society, success in our families. And not just our physical families that we grew up with, our church family. So when you think about that first commandment, where God says, you shall have no other gods before me, what is it that comes into your mind? Now you may have a lot of thoughts, just like, well, you know, well, that's really simple. Mr. Why Not? What do you mean? I know I'm not supposed to have any other gods before me. When we look at what mankind does, they conjure up all kinds of things. They conjure up demonic things, which we just came out of, didn't we? October 31st, the most demonic day of the year. But people conjure those up, and they're gods to them. They look at them. And we look at ancient people who worshipped Baal. And we look at those people who had other ancient gods that you can probably think of and picture. You know, one of the first gods, when I asked that question, when I asked the question, what comes to your mind? It wasn't the golden calf. But people worshiped that of old. We know that the Greeks and Romans, they had gods of Venus, Neptune. I mean, think of all the gods that they had in place during that time. But it doesn't seem to have much bearing or impact on the Christian Western society. Modern educated men surely wouldn't do all that, would they? Have other gods? Well, most people feel that the commandment, this one first commandment, they keep pretty well. If you'd ask people, well, we keep it well. Well, that's good. And we should. But I want you to think about, do we really keep it that well? Do we really keep our worship of God, the one true God, all that well? But I think we should ask another question. Could well-meaning Christians, that's us, anybody that keeps God's laws, be guilty of worshiping other gods before the true God? You may think, well, no, I wouldn't do that. But then hopefully when you really think about it, you say, yeah, I guess so. I guess that could happen. Well, let's make it more personal, if it isn't already. Have you ever worshipped other gods? Have you ever worshipped other gods? Well, when you think about that, I think you're going to be surprised by the answer. Maybe you're not surprised. Maybe you know which direction I'm going with this. But we'll see that in the course of the sermon, as I go through the sermon today. Because you might be shocked. I hope you're not. I hope you realize what I'm getting at. That you might have done that. Thing is, maybe be surprised about how often you've done that. And I've done that. And I can answer you, yes, I have. If we're honest, which we're supposed to be, and I could say probably some of us have done it in the past week. So today we're going to talk about that first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. God the Father. So we're going to look at what it says. We're going to cover more in depth of what this is talking about. And then we're going to ask what it means to us today. And then we're going to see some ways that we're guilty of breaking it, of putting other gods before God. So let's begin. Kind of in the beginning, in Exodus 20 in verse 1. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 1. And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Pretty clear statement, pretty concise statement, isn't it? And God, knowing and being God he is, he begins here to really, I guess, codify his law for man. And in the New Testament, we know he goes over that law, and actually Jesus Christ is the one who talks about that same law, and he puts it in two different forms. As he puts, really, I think, two broad parts. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. And he says, love your neighbor as yourself. So Christ himself is telling us there's two great commandments, which is the basis for all of God's law. We know that in the beginning, Jesus Christ is the one speaking. He identified himself as the creator. Even though it was, people know who it was. It was Jesus Christ doing it. Okay, we know that. And he identifies himself as the covenant God to all of them, working out his plan for all mankind on this earth. And he uses the descriptive phrase here, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So these were all familiar to the people then, weren't they? They had gone through them. They were a part of that. All that were gathered there, they understood it. And he saved them from slavery. He had given them freedom. He had given them freedom to follow him. And as such, he had a claim on their obedience, and he had a claim also for their gratitude. But notice something else very important here when we look at these verses. He says, I am the Lord your God. Now, when we look at that, and you can go back and look at Cicino's Jewish commentary, he says it this way. And I guess it's to establish really a foundational relationship with God. It says, not only is there only one God, but that one God is my God. He is my sole ruler and guide in all that I do. This not only establishes the personal relationship between God and his people, it establishes the fundamental relationship in all life. All that we do is to be according to his will in pleasing him. So we look at this brings this whole thing that I'm talking about, this command, down to a very personal relationship, doesn't it? Very personal level. You know, in I guess you could even say, in addition to the overall relationship of God as their creator, as the sustainer of the universe, and all the other things that he does, it's very personal. Well, in verse 3, he says, you have to have no other gods before me. Now we think, how many times do you think he said this in the Bible? I didn't count, but a lot. And why don't we get this? Well, we're human. We have human nature. But why is it we can't get this? You are to have no other gods before me. Well, let's look at that a little bit further. He says, that doesn't mean just before me. It means no other gods besides me. No other gods by my side. No other gods in addition to me. No other gods before my face. Now you put it how you like. Pretty clear. One God, our God. So the intent, if you don't have it yet, is that we're to have nothing at all in this life before God. No other gods. No one else to depend on. No other gods to help us along with God. You know, I don't think any of us would worship any other God instead of the true God. But would we ever resort to another God in addition to? Or another God beside the true God. And what that means for us is what? We have a backup. We have a backup plan. Just in case God doesn't do the things we want. Just in case God's plan for me isn't what I want. So we have a backup plan. Somebody else we can turn to. Say, you know what? Help me with this here. We can't do that, as you know. And I think we all know that. As it means that you aren't totally trusting and committed yourself to God. You don't believe what he's telling us through the scriptures. And what we've come through in the feast, it is true that Israel had a difficult time in staying focused. They had a difficult time trusting the true God. And sometimes, you know, he allowed things to happen in their lives where they could promptly sought another solution. Well, that didn't work. Let's try this one. Instead of what? Simply leaving God where he was in first place. Right? In first place. God is first and foremost. We have to keep that in our minds. And most of us, that must be a part of our hearts. Not just our minds, but our hearts. Knowing that he is first. You know, when Jesus Christ came to this earth, he reiterated this over and over and over again. Again, for the reason that because we don't get it. People don't get it. And so he told his disciples he told them that God had to remain in first place. Let's go to Luke chapter 14. Luke 14. Again, something that we should be thinking about after coming out of the feast, going through another year, things that we need to do to be that king and priest. And if I guarantee you, we don't put God first, we won't be there. Luke chapter 14, verse 25. It says, now great multitudes went with him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother and wife and children and brother and sister, yes, in his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Well, that's terrible, isn't it, to hate them? It's not what he's talking about here. What are you saying? That you have to love less than me, God. You have to put them in second place. And that's hard as human beings. That's hard. But he says, if you don't, you cannot be my disciples. That's quite a statement, isn't it? Kind of eye-opening. It should get us to think. God has to be in first place in our lives, in our priorities, in everything that we do. He has to come first. You know, and I know there are, that word escapes my mind. There are people, I'm just going to say that, around the world who believe that, no, family is first. Family is first, and I'm going to do everything for my family. And I thought, well, that's really sad. But that's what they've been taught all their lives. Family comes first. And it is difficult for us as families to say, I'm going to put God before you, my wife, or you, my children. But I would say if Christ stood up here and you had your family over on this side and huge tidal wave, I don't know, I'm just thinking, is coming down 1,000 feet high and you know you're going to die, where are you going to go? I hope you know God, Christ. Your family can't do anything. They're going to die with you. But Jesus Christ can bring you back. Jesus Christ, God the Father, have all the answers. They know what's best. So we have to pick what's right. And Jesus Christ here is doing that. Look at what he brings up. He brings up the family in this statement. He brings up mother and father and sister and brother and family. That's what he's talking about. He knows it's important. God knows it's important. But if God isn't in first place, then nothing else is going to work properly. Nothing else is going to work the way he has established it. Let's go to Matthew chapter 4 and verse 10. Matthew 4 verse 10, because like I said, Jesus Christ was put into these same positions. He went through the same, well, more than we did. He went through a lot of trouble. And we know that when he was in the wilderness, Satan tried tempting him, trying to make him go the wrong way, try to make him his God and not God. Here in Matthew 4, verse 10, and Jesus said to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. Jesus Christ wasn't falling for it, but Satan was enticing him. Satan was trying to tell him through all of what Satan could do, I'll give you this, I'll give you that. And God, Christ said, no, I will not have any other gods before the God, my God. None. So he set the example for us. He left family. He left friends. He left everything for God. And we look at our forefathers, they didn't turn out so well. Right? They didn't fare very well in this as Jesus Christ did, because they weren't as strong. They weren't as committed as Jesus Christ, to worship God and worship him only. And I don't mean just worshiping, I mean exhorting him. Exhorting God the Father. Instead, what? They opened themselves up. By not doing that, they opened themselves up to being tempted to serve other gods. Right? Because then our mind goes. And it's easier to get off track. And the things that seem to be obvious because they were visible. Right? The things that they thought, oh, that's going to help me out because I could see it. It was desirable. It's going to help me. We have to know, no, it's not going to help you. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 5. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 5. This is what should be obvious to us all. It says, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. I mean, God told them this over and over and over again. Keep it in your heart. Keep it close to you. In your conscience, in your mind. Teach this to your family, your children. Focus on it throughout your life. Dropping down to verse 10. So it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into a land of which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you you large and beautiful cities, which you did not build, houses full of all good things, which you did not fill, hewn out of wells, which you did not dig, vineyards of olive trees, which you did not plant. And when you have eaten to the full and are full, then beware, lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So what is he saying here? When we are richly blessed and have plenty, that's when we tend to forget God. Because as human beings, we're never satisfied. We want more. More wealth, more whatever it is. That's what happens. And we forget God. The one who brought us out of bondage, out of the house of slavery. Verse 14 says, you shall not go out after other gods, the gods of the peoples who are all around you. Why? And we're here. We're in that same thing. There are people out here who have gods of all different kinds. And why shouldn't we do that? Because God is a jealous God. God wants us as his family. they went out after other gods. That's what they did because they could see them. And it was easier to do. It was easier to do. But he goes on to remind them to constantly keep in mind, by teaching our children, by teaching those we love, God's intervention that he have, his cares for all of us. Let's go to Joshua 23 and verse 7. Joshua 23 and verse 7. He goes on here with the saying, unless you go among these nations, these who remain among you, and they're around us, they're among us, you shall not make mention of the name of their gods, nor cause anyone to swear by them. You shall not serve them, nor bow down to them. How did Israel go to other gods? They got distracted. They got distracted and pulled away from God by all the things that were going on around them. Life. The approach of those around them. Their neighbors. The people they worked with. The people they go to school with. They got distracted. Verse 8, it says, but you shall hold fast to the Lord your God as you have done to this day. But they failed. Israel failed. They didn't hold fast to the Lord their God as they had been, it says, as they had done until this day. That didn't happen, did it? They allowed other things to creep in and crowd God out. You know, early in the sermon, I asked, have you ever placed other gods before God or beside God or along with God? Well, I think the next question is, what constitutes other gods? What? Well, in general, I think that we can say other gods is anything that comes in and is put before God. Anything. Our thoughts, our minds, our affections. Other gods may vary from time to time. Whether that a thing becomes a god is determined really by many things, our attitude, where our mind is at that time, what we're going through at that time, our approach, our dreams, and our dedication, maybe to it at the expense of other things. Different things can become different gods to different people. You know, in several places we find the concept of bowing down. Now, hope you realize that bowing down doesn't mean you bow down to it and, you know, that kind of thing. What that means, it means that you are serving them. You are looking for them for help. You are even acknowledging that they have power of some sort, or they are going to benefit you of some sort. And sometimes we get into that. We think that. And there's a lot of things that can be done with. I want you to think about this a little bit. Because one of the biggest pitfalls for us today in this area is putting physical things before God. Putting physical things at too high of a priority, whether that's our house, family, car, vacation, whatever. I want to give you a story. I'm going to give you a personal example of having other gods or other God. When I was 8, I had one of my relatives come to Minnesota from California in his 1973 Corvette Stingray. I love that car. And of course, he gave me a ride in it. And after that, that was it. Ever since then, I've wanted a Corvette. Now, I wouldn't accept any year, but a lot of the older ones, yes. A new one, that's out of touch. But 4 months ago, I came across a 1979 L82 Corvette stored in a storage unit for 26 years. I paid $500 for it. It's at home in my garage. It does run now. And the body's beautiful. The interior, not so much, and it needs work. But if it was up to me, I'd be doing everything I can for her. And her name is Yvette. Just letting you know. She is my prized possession. But you know what? She doesn't come before God. Doesn't come before my wife or my family or really anything else. Would I like her to? Yes, I would. I'd like her to be with me here today. And maybe one day she will be. But it's just something that I've, you know, was able to find, or miraculously find. You hear about those barn finds every now and then, and this is like one of those. But anyway, I could let it be in a god. I could, but I'm not, because that's not so important in this life. That's just a thing. It is a thing. And we have to realize that God is number one. God is the one that we have to put our minds to. There's nothing wrong with having these things. There is not. But if getting it, maintaining it, spending all your time on it, doing the desires so that you can get, you know, everything you want with it, really creates problems with your relationship with God. It takes you away from God. It becomes that other God. And they can be if you let them become a god before the true God. Let's go to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2. In verse 15. It says, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of the Father abides forever. And isn't that what we just came through at the feast? Abiding forever, eternity with God the Father and Jesus Christ. You know, we can be so attracted to these things that we begin to think of them as all the time. Right? Think of them all the time. Believe me, I could think about Yvette all the time. About what she's going to look like. About how I'm going to look driving her. But I don't. I mean, yes, it's back there. I'd be lying if I didn't say that. It's there. I mean, I am looking forward to that, but it's not a priority. It's not my number one priority. God is the number one priority, and my family, and then what I'm supposed to be doing to move forward with God the Father and what he's got planned for me. But we can get taken off that track. But we find something like that and plan how we're going to get it, what we're going to do, how we're going to execute that plan, and what we're going to do with it. It's detrimental to our relationship with God. I ask you this, how often do you think physical things, belongings, finances, whatever it is, begin to encroach on our time and infringe upon our relationship with God? I think there's a lot of things in life we can look at and say that they do. A lot of things. And it doesn't have to happen, but it does all too often. Our time is taken up with I looked at my wife this morning, the toys. Right? All of us men have toys. Some of us men have too many toys. I'm not one. I'm just telling you right now. And we spend all of our time, our spare time, or could spend all of our spare time bowing down and taking care of them. But John goes on to here to talk about, he talks about the lust of the eyes. And we think about, well, in my case, it was a Corvette. Other things can be a lust of the eyes, a house, a boat, whatever that is. But you ever look at it the other way? Lust of the eyes is maybe something that somebody that you've seen that you're consumed with that you want to look like them. Well, I want to be like them. I want to look like them. How do they keep themselves so, you know, how do they do that? And so you look at improving your looks to be look more and more like them. And I think we all know what you mean. I mean, we all have probably seen people like, man, if I could be more like that, if I could dress more like that, if I could do this, if I could do that. And we can do that so desperately that we dedicate ourselves to looking like them, or not exactly like them, because that'd be odd. But we do. We get so entrenched to be like that, to do the things they can do. And you have to be happy with self. You have to be happy with what you are, who you are, what you look like. You know, as a young kid, I grew up and I look in the mirror every day and I say, man, it's good to look like you. And I'm doing really good. But be happy with who you are. Don't desire to be like somebody else. What else can we make other gods in our lives? What about exercise? Exercise can be a god, can it? Because we're sold on maybe being an Adonis, like somebody else that we know that's muscular and built and can do all these things. And you just think, wow, they're such a fantastic specimen of what a man should look like, or a woman. And I want to be like that. I mean, that's in ways not all bad to look at, not bad way to think, because you want to be healthy, don't you? Exercise is awesome. We're to be healthy. We're to be a temple of God. So we're to treat our bodies the way it should be so they don't get sick. And so to do that, we exercise, don't we? We get healthy bodies. And that's a good thing if we look at it in that way. What about the third area that it talks about here? This pride of life. The pride of life. You know, I mean, a lot of people, and I'll be honest, I was one of them years ago trying to reach that epitome of my job and climb the corporate ladder to be whatever it was, manager, zone director, whatever. Why? Because don't you know who I am? I mean, people look up to me because I climbed my way all through this job and now look at where I'm at. They desire the admiration, the praise of men and women. And they dedicate them numerous hours to that quest, to be improving themselves at the expense, at times, of their families. I know, because I did that for several years. I was away 2 weeks of every month from my family, and it wasn't worth it. It was not worth it. You can do that to the detriment of your mate, and most of all, to God. You could look at even some have sacrificed the Sabbath in order to be looked up to. I know people who have. The Sabbath is important. It is important. It's very important to God. But some seem to throw an ox in a ditch too frequently so they can pull it out on the Sabbath. And my saying is, sell the ox or fill in the ditch. Or both. We need to take the Sabbath and its purpose seriously. What does it mean? Why are we here? Should we be here? There's a lot of things to think about when we're talking about that. If we take it lightly, doing things on a Sabbath that aren't appropriate, we can have another God before the true God. Let's go to Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. I know we've heard this many times in the last probably couple months. But here it says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You can't have another God beside God. And Jesus Christ tells us here, it's impossible to serve two masters. Can't do it. Those side by side, if you know what I'm talking about. And this is kind of the situation that's talked about in the first commandment. The other God doesn't have to be in front of the true God. It can be beside the true God. It can be a part of all that we do, and it will create divided loyalties. You know, the whole message in Matthew chapter 6 that we need to focus on is that we have to get our priorities straight. It says, don't worry about the physical. Don't worry about the things that we have in this physical life. Why? Because God will take care of us. We have what we need, don't we? We have. We're living. He can take care of the birds and all those things that we read about. He can surely take care of us. We are more important to him than anything else in creation. So we don't worry about those things, but we're supposed to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. That's what it is. And that takes our full concentration. Any of you don't think so, boy, it does. It does. They have to be part of all that we do as we go through this life. That has to be in our minds and hearts and thoughts. Because Satan, we know, will try to distract us. He will pull us away at any chance he gets by putting other things in front of you, to putting worries in your mind, doubts in your mind. And we have to resist all those tendencies that can occupy our thoughts and our desires. Another item that can be a God before the true God is self. Self. Many people, if you look in the world, are consumed with themselves. You look at all the actors, and they're consumed with themselves. And whether it's is their importance or their needs or their desires or problems or their sicknesses or whatever, their thoughts are totally on themselves. Totally. And God has called you and I, as we heard in the sermonette, as part of being kings, is to serve. It's to be servants. And actually, we have to look at this, we are to be bond servants. And a bond servant is not concerned about himself, but about him whom he is called to serve. Jesus Christ was a bondservant. He gave everything for us. Wasn't concerned about himself. We're to be those bondservants. Or I give everything for my wife, everything for my family. That's what it's about. Not me. I've said this before. In certain ways, I don't matter. And I hope you see what I'm saying here. If we're to be bondservants like Christ, he didn't matter. He knew if he did what was right, he was going to be back with God the Father. We are to have that same attitude, a bondservant. Everything should be about the other people, another person. And I've actually counseled marriages, said that. That if your marriage was in problems, if you gave to your spouse all that you had, you were a bondservant to them, you cared about them more than you, and they the same back to you, there shouldn't be any issues because you do for the other. And that's all you care about. In that situation, you don't matter because you're a bondservant to them. And that's what Christ was for God. He was a bondservant. He gave everything and did everything, gave up everything, because he didn't matter at that point in time. He didn't. Let's go to 2 Timothy 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3. You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. So this is the way we're to become, isn't it? Right here, as our human nature will tell us, that's not normal. But it begins by putting God first and foremost, because he really is the only true God. And when you and I succeed at putting him first in all that we do, then it will be much easier to put the other things that we have in our lives in a proper perspective, in their proper place in our lives. But it all begins with this first commandment that we've been going over today. But then we have pride that enters the equation. Pride, when we focus on ourselves. And again, we just talked about if we're bondservants, we don't. But we know that pride does come into the equation. And as we yield to God and recognize his position and what he has for us, we begin to think about others and not ourselves. And we realize that we're not as important as we think we are. You know, for some, another God can be their mate. Can be their mate. They're so enthralled with their mate that they will do anything for them. Now, I know we're supposed to love our mates. We are. But when you put them in a position that you'll do anything for them, then you can make them another God. I mean, while we are to love and care for our mates, there is a limit to the dedication and the loyalty we have for them. They cannot come before God. Because if a wife is told, and we know this, obey your husband in the Lord. And if our mate causes us to sin and draws us away from obedience to God, they can become the other God. Remember, anything you put before God, anything, whether it's our affections, our loyalty, our dedication, becomes another God. And I think you know there's all kinds of intangible things that we can put before God. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 18. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 18. Let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become a fool that he may become wise. I mean, look at what that says here. It says even certain knowledge, even certain wisdom can become all-consuming to a person and be another God before the true God. Because do you see how smart I am? Do you see the knowledge that I possess? Let me enlighten you. And there's people out there like that who want to do that. And that first other God, which we know will negatively impact our relationship with God. Man has made God of almost everything there is in this world. Think about that. Let's go to Romans 6 and verse 16. Romans chapter 6, verse 16. It says, do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey? Whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. So Paul here is telling us that we become slaves, doesn't it? Slaves to, servants to, worshipers of whatever we serve and obey. And if your job says you have to sacrifice your family or your mate and take time away from God to be successful, that's another God. If we strive to please someone, whether it's our mate, fiance, anyone, family, at the expense of our relationship with God, that's another God. So what do we need to do? What can we do to be sure that we're putting away all these strange gods, all the things that do come up in our lives as human beings? How do we make sure that we have no other gods before me? Again, the true God. Or besides me. Or in place of me. Matthew chapter 19. Matthew 19, verse 23. Then Jesus said to his disciples, assuredly I say to you that it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And again I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. When the disciples heard it, they were greatly astonished, saying, who then can be saved? But Jesus looked at them and said to them, with men, this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. Then Peter answered and said to him, see, we have left all and followed you. Therefore, what shall we have? Human nature popping right out. We've done this. What are you going to give me? So Jesus answered and said to them, assuredly, I say to you that in this generation, when the Son of Man sits on the throne of his glory, you who have followed me, you who have kept me as your God, will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone who sits or has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my namesake shall receive 100-fold and inherit eternal life. You and I need to forsake all that we have. Not easy, is it? Now, does it mean we become homeless? Does it mean that we are wandering missionaries going wherever we want around the world trying to help others? It means that our affections, our desires, our heart is directed to being servants of God, keeping Him in first place in our hearts and minds. You know, we have a society that is dedicated to things. And now we see some of those things, and we probably have gotten used to having some of those things taken away. But there can be a tendency to put more time to maintain the same standards. So we've lost that. We want to get back to where we were. We want to keep up with the Joneses. We want to be like them. And that's not what we're supposed to be. We're having to keep Him first and keep our hearts and minds right. Satan will convince us that you deserve it. You need it. You'll be better off with it. But you won't be. In the days ahead, through this next year and through the rest of our lives, it may become necessary to give up lots. And in fact, I can tell you, you are going to give up lots of things that we want and maybe things that we're used to having. But to sacrifice our relationship with God, to give up that, to put other gods before the true God, is not an option for us as converted Christians. It's not an option for us that are called sons and daughters of God and brothers and sisters of Jesus Christ. It's not an option. But Satan wants us to think it is. Other things are going to come along and try to get us off track. It will. And you and I have to learn not to yield to those things. We can't yield to that. In closing, let's turn to Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5, in verse 11. So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him. God must be first and foremost in our desires, in our affections, in everything that we do. All of the rest is going to fall in line after that. And if that remains constant with us, we will be able to worship and serve the Lord and Him only. Otherwise, you and I are going to be guilty of having other gods before the true God. And the result of that is devastating.